Hello, and welcome to the Geek Night Inn, episode 27. I'm the host, Laura, and I'm here with Tilly this week.
Hi.
Tilly's here, we're in the flat. We're back to having enough internet to podcast with, which is nice. We've got Gemma Thompson with us this week.
Hello.
Hooray, Gemma's here. I haven't spoken in too long. We need to make this more regular. Kate's not with us this week, unfortunately, but we do have a special guest. So, special guest, do you like to introduce yourself?
Oh God, you're talking about me as the special guest.
Yeah, I'm talking about you. You're the special guest.
My name is the Dr. Lauren Grieve, and I make games and help people. And I don't know. I was recently on a podcast with Laura, and she was nice enough to invite me on.
Yeah, we were on. I don't think it's gone live yet, but we were on an episode of Digital Drift together, which is going to be quite exciting when it goes up. I was very happy with that heard out, and I like we talked a bit, and I was like, "Oh, Lauren's really cool, so we should get Lauren on the sort of general laid back geeky show we do." So that's what happened, and now here we are and stuff. So, hooray!
Yay.
Stuff we can talk about. Like, I'd start with Lauren's thing this week because, like, it's a thing that everyone has some degree of interest in, which is always a good place to start this. So, Lauren, do you want to talk about your Antholojam thing you're doing?
Sure. I mean, long story short, there was a what was it, in November, early November, Zoe Quinn
Yeah.
decided that she was going to curate a game jam, and she wanted it to be kind of like an old school science fiction anthology where it's a bunch of short stories by different authors. So for a game jam version of it was going to be a bunch of different games. Originally it was supposed to be 12 that were supposed to be played in under an hour and were all going to be released together. She got 100 people, 100 teams had submitted game design ideas. She narrowed it down to 15. And it's my own personal part in it. I thought it was actually really funny because I was coordinating a bunch of friends of mine, the artists and game designers and programmers and people that were just looking to kind of pad out their portfolio, so to speak. And I was like, "Oh, you should go for this team because they need an artist," and all that kind of stuff. I wasn't trying to get on any of the teams. And when the 15 were chosen, none of my friends made it on teams. But then a gentleman who had pitched a tabletop role-playing game went on Twitter and said, "Hey, I'm a team of one. Anybody else out there want to help me with this?" And I was like, "I have experience doing that. I will be more than happy to help." So I got put on a team. We were called we called ourselves the Red Shirts. There were four of us in the end, and we created a tabletop role-playing game that is heavy improv of basically a Star Trek episode. It's called Space Journey, and it should be pretty cool. And my dirty little secret about it is I have never really watched Star Trek. So I was very much like, "I'm going to focus on the mechanics because I don't know what a Klingon is." And yeah.
I like the idea. Like, from my personal experience, you'll have written a good original Star Trek episode with that because you've never seen the Star Trek stuff. Because I couldn't follow most of the episodes of the original Star Trek series. They're just too
That's
weird.
so I guess I have seen one episode and it was a Voyager. So I have an appreciation for Kate Mulgrew, but that's about
Why?
it.
No Star Trek whatsoever.
Wow. My main question I had is, has working on a Star Trek improv-based sort of like tabletop game in any way inspired you to be like, "Oh, I kind of want to watch some Star Trek now"? Or are you still like, "No, I just am interested in the tabletop gaming, like that aspect. I don't care about Star Trek."
So, truth be told, no, it hasn't made me more interested in watching any episodes of Star Trek, because it's one of those things where I look at it and it's like, so the first season had like there's five runs of Star Trek, like not including the movies, and three of them went for seven seasons, and then I look at like the stack of books that I have that I could be reading, or the 100 million Steam games that I should be playing just to justify the purchases. And I'm like, I don't have time to devote to this really dated at sometimes, or at least from what I hear, show, and especially since all of my friends are really hardcore about Star Trek, and I'm so sick of hearing about it most of the time, that like my parents were Trekkies, and I'm like, I'll watch Babylon 5, I'll watch Firefly, they're excellent, but I'm just having, yeah, right.
Okay.
That being said, my favorite Star Trek related paraphernalia, though, is Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
Such a good movie.
What I love about that is, I think I mentioned on an earlier podcast, it's just that stands up as, like, I just like the sci-fi in it. That the idea of the Omega device, like, actually fits in with my current understanding of how, I mean, I don't believe in time, but if it did exist, it would be the Omega device from Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm not even gonna, like, I think a podcast is too small an avenue to be like, okay, so Gemma doesn't believe in time. We're not even gonna delve into that. That's probably a long topic to get into. Now, I don't know if Tilly's gonna agree with me. Like, if there is one episode of Star Trek I would say is worth watching just to be like, hey, this is generally what this show, like the original series, felt like, my call would be the Tribbles episode.
I was gonna say the Naked Time.
Oh, yeah, there is an episode about these fluffy things called Tribbles that, like, they're adorable, and it's really just a hilarious episode. How would you describe the Naked Time one?
Everyone goes a bit nuts.
Yeah, everyone goes a bit nuts and gets naked.
No one gets naked, apart from Sulu. Sulu gets naked.
Dr. Kane running around yelling with a samurai sword or something.
Yeah, like...
like, there's a point where Spock is like sobbing and he's like, I am in control of my emotions. It's like, oh, babe, no.
I don't really have much of an interest in Star Trek beyond Star Trek the original series. Like, that is the one that I quite like, because I like the reboot movies in their own way, but like, I like the original series for its slightly silly bumbling escapades in spaceness. Like, there is one of the films, I think it's the fourth of the original series films, the one with the whales.
Yeah, I love the whales.
Which Voyage like, Home.
You can jump into that without any like prior Star Trek knowledge, and it's just like, hey, we're aliens on Earth trying to find a whale, and it's like, you know where I can find the nuclear vessels? And also,
oh yeah, because it's set in the middle of the Cold War, and then Chekhov is obviously Russian, and he's speaking to the American policeman. Do you know where I can find the nuclear vessels?
Oh my god.
That film is hilarious.
Hold on a second. I have to... So, in high school, two of my friends were immigrants from Russia, and I did not understand why all my other friends made them say that phrase all the time.
Yeah, that is the point behind that phrase, is it is from Star Trek, the Voyage Home, is it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Goodness gracious, it is...
Cold War era, like, aliens have dropped down to Earth and are trying to find a nuclear power source on Earth during the Cold War in America. And as such, they're just popping down during the Cold War into America and being like, do you know where I can find the nuclear vessels? And
I must interject, because it's also the film in which Kirk says, no, I'm from Idaho, I just work in space.
That's a great line.
Like, that's the thing, is like, I have no interest in, like, Star Trek is still good when it gets serious, but like, I would never go back and like really want to rewatch like the later series. It's the original series just for its hilarity that like I'm like, I could just watch these forever. They are slightly hilarious at times, but yeah, so Star Trek and stuff. Who else has got things they want to talk about this week?
Well, I just want to pick up on the Anthology Jam, actually, given that, just raise a glass, given that we have finished jamming. So I'm just going to share that celebratory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and so...
I guess to finish it, it ran from the 19th of November to the 19th of December. And as Zoe Quinn mentioned today, I asked her if there's any estimated time for it to come out. She said that she's like wrapping up a couple of contract things and should come out like really soon. So definitely look out for that.
Because I'm very excited about like the idea of Star Trek role playing heavy on the like creativity side. I'm like, yep, that's a thing we can do. Hooray. We might have to do this. We might have to find a way to do it on the podcast if we can.
If we had other Trekkie friends, we could play.
We will bully Kate.
Only Trekkie friends.
That's fine. We will bully Kate into trying it. We'll make Gemma do it. We'll drag Lauren back on at some point, and we'll all Star Trek out. This is your introduction to Star Trek. An unofficial game.
I'll be the director. So,
yeah. Okay. If you want to have a hands-off role, you can direct. Gemma, what did you do in Anthologia?
I
can never remember what you did.
Our game is not that awesome. Well, it's not that cool. We don't like call out to Star Trek or anything. But yeah, we made a base building game.
Apparently not.
We made a base building game, so we wanted to make something with a strategy kind of thing. So it's myself, Delia Hamwood, and I probably can't credit him on the podcast, sadly. We're having to refer to him as the mysterious programming entity. Ooh. And also the mysterious art entity. basically just for like work reasons. It's a game about managing resources. It's set around a terraforming company. So you are a contract terraformer, sort of brought in as a kind of parachuted into this doomed project, and you have to get it back up and running. So there are all these things you're discovering about the planet, and the your team are freaking out a little bit, and you just have to manage that. It's kind of a simple thing because building a strategy game within the space of a month is hard. it was made. I guess I'm just looking forward to it being out there because I haven't had a game released for quite some time.
Right, yeah. Be nice to have something that's sort of out there and in people's hands again. It's always nice.
Yeah. So rather than educational games, which get to nobody except American school kids.
That's fine. As soon as it's done again, you'll have to send it to me so I can shout at everyone and be like, everyone, play this, do it.
Well, but this is the nice thing about Anthologiam. It's being sold as a whole package. So you'll get these, I think it's 14 games. There's certainly 14 teams anyway listed on the cover art. You get like 14 hours of gameplay all in like wicked golden age sci-fi stuff. So,
woo, very nice. Yeah. Telly, have you got anything you want to talk about this week?
Yes, the Outsourcer's Apprentice, which I've just,
you just put in our secret chat.
No, it's been there the whole time. You just haven't been paying
attention. Oh, I've not been paying attention. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what is the Outsourcer's Apprentice, Tilly?
Well, it's one of the free books that was given out at Nine Worlds last year. And I finally got around to reading it. And it's it sort of reminded me of what of Jep. So basically what this book is that it's set partly in this like fantasy world where there's like elves and dragons and knights and castles and all this stuff, and then it's half set in a world. And basically what's happened is this guy has gone through to the fantasy world, and he's like the elves that play in an orchestra, they play the hold music for call centers and like the lumberjacks in like the forest with Little Red Riding Hood and the wolves and stuff, they make the little wooden things you get for stirring coffee. And they all like they don't understand why they're doing it, but they just like they feel like they have to do it. And it's really cool because like, it's stuff like, oh, I don't get it. Why are we playing the same song over and over again? And like the elves, and every now and then the elves stop playing, and it's like, your call is important to us. Please hold. And they're going, I don't know what that means, but I'm just going to keep playing. It's very good.
It's a very interesting premise. I have, like, I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Like, I think I need to read it because it sounds interesting.
I think I gave it to a charity shop.
Oh, fine. I'll have to track it down somewhere then. I'll go around the charity shops and try and find which one you gave it to, and I'll buy it back. I can talk about something this week. I've been playing like the cutest, most adorable video game, which you've been watching me play this one.
Yes.
Tilly, which is Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
Oh.
Which is kind of finally actually available in the UK now, it seems. Basically you play as a little like one of the mushroom headed people from the Mario games, and you have a huge oversized backpack on, and you're going out trying to hunt treasure. And you can't jump, you can't fight anything, you're terrified of everything, and you're just adorably running around trying to pick up coins and stars and things without getting hurt.
You can throw radishes at things.
You can throw radishes at things. You can find radishes and throw them at stuff. But yeah, it's just this adorable little adventure where everything's like really shiny and happy, and whenever you finish a level and get a star, it's like, it's wonderful.
So, have you played Super Mario 3D World, where that game...
Yes, exactly. So
how much different are the Toad levels from there to actual the Toad, the whole game that you just...
Okay, played? Well, yeah, as you were saying, like, in Super Mario 3D World on the Wii U, they had these small Toad levels, which were this same sort of thing, where you had, like, Toad unable to jump, you sort of turn the little sea secrets and collect coins and go through them. The main difference between these and like this main full game and those smaller levels within 3D World is just the scope of the levels. You have much larger environments, much more challenges, much more hidden objects, lengthier levels. You've got a lot more secrets hidden throughout them, and like there's a lot more sort of scope in the presentation. Like you get every so often you'll get boss fight levels where it's like, you might come up against a giant dragon and you've got to climb through this whole area and like knock a big stone pillar down to bash it on the head. And it's mainly just the amount of content, the scope, and like the amount of content within each level, I think is the, it's a really nice idea of like, it took something that worked as like a small piece of content and has fleshed it out into like a really nice, satisfying full product. Which is really nice, because I really enjoyed those those Toad levels in 3D World, and it's nice to now just have a lot of them. And there's all sorts of, like, they all have secondary objectives. You can go back and it's like, okay, well, there's this many diamonds I'm trying to find throughout the level, but then it's like, try and complete the level by only tapping the screen this many times, or try and find this many coins throughout the level, or try not to be seen by any of the enemies at any point, and... Yeah, it's just a really nice, challenging, adorable thing that I played this week. So that's fun.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I've been wondering how long it's been since a Mario game did feature radishes. Because that was in...
Mario 2.
Huh.
Yeah, I think No, was it 3? It was the one that wasn't actually a Mario game. It was Doki Doki Panic or something?
Yeah.
No. That was Mario 2.
I think that's the last one that had radishes.
I think it is. I think it's the first one who had radishes too, because you defeated the boss by throwing vegetables in his mouth, because it was teaching children that vegetables are bad.
Yes, vegetables are very bad. They'll kill you if you touch them. Anyway, I just got into comic books this week.
Yes, I shall have to continue this with Kate as well, because we were talking about that. Yes, basically I discovered that Stockholm has a really nicely stocked comics library. There's a big building right near the central station on the main square, which is basically their house of culture. And in it there is a comics library. And I went down with a friend and basically dropped my jaw and hoovered up comics, graphic novels and stuff. Yeah, it's this place of wonder, because the maximum loaning limit is 50 books.
Oh,
so
geez.
For 3 weeks, you can technically pick up 50 books and just take them home. so I only picked up 9. But I picked up a bit of a mixture of series, of like ones I had recommended by my friend, and also others that I'd seen around or have started reading. So for example, I picked up volume 2 of Chew, which is a really interesting... it's a comic series about a detective who has the ability to eat things and then have like the memories of that substance come back to him. So like if he eats beef, he ends up with vivid memories of the cow's entire life, which he ends up horrified by. There's only one type of food. I've forgotten what it was, but there's one type of food that he can eat without having these flashbacks.
But anyway, if Ned from Pushing Daisies wasn't a vegetarian.
I am not familiar with Pushing Daisies.
Basically, in Pushing Daisies, this guy called Ned, he makes pies, and if he touches something that's dead, it comes back to life. So obviously he's a vegetarian, because if he puts meat in his mouth... And it starts moving.
It comes back to life for how long? Is it 60 seconds? But then, like, if
he touches, yeah.
If he touches it a second time, it will die again. If he lets it, it goes for more than 60 seconds, it will permanently come back to life, but something else will die at random. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But anyway, you were talking about...
He's put to use by the police because he can basically nibble on corpses and find out what happened. But
that's what I was going to say. Is he having to eat an edible thing? So it's like, okay, well, we've got the murder weapon. Eat the murder weapon. Eat this ham.
Yeah, pretty much. But the series is written in quite a sort of dry humor kind of way. This is what I really like about it. Is like, basically, he's constantly given, like, there's one crime that's committed, I think, in Volume 2, where they basically left a steaming pile of dung in the middle of this emptied out safe. And this, because this guy's power is seen as very, like, scummy, he's basically given all these dirty jobs. And it's just a comic book about him face palming a lot and getting into trouble and stuff. It's brilliant.
That sounds really interesting. What did you say it's called?
It's called Chew. It's because the protagonist is Tony Chew. Yeah. I actually came across that one.
C-H-U.
Yes. C-H-E-U. Yeah.
Okay. Is this available in English or were you reading it in Swedish?
No, it's, yeah, I think it's an American comic. Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
It was actually in one of the Humble Bundles, volume one of which made me find it. Anyway.
Oh, man. So yeah,
I found that one, but also a very interesting little series called Black Sad. I don't know if there are more than two volumes. I'll have to look into this. But basically, it's an anthro film noir kind of detective series with the most gorgeous sequential art I've seen in a graphic novel. It's very noir and just basically happens to have anthro characters walking around in it. I don't really know what to say more beyond that because the detail is in all the mystery and things.
That sounds interesting. Definitely.
Yeah, it's like wolves and fedoras and stuff. It's cool.
I'll give that a look.
I remember there was, the first comic you were talking about, there was a book that I once read, written in the same sort of dry humour, but about nursery rhyme characters.
Oh, yeah, I've
got... So, like, the tagline of the book was literally, Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall, or was he pushed? Oh. And it's a detective story about trying to find out, like, about the murderer of Humpty Dumpty. And they have to go around and talk to all these nursery rhyme characters about, like, oh, what did... And it turns out that, like, Humpty Dumpty had a gambling problem and like he had an ex-wife and a child and it I don't know it was just it was well Jack Spratt was one of the detectives I can't remember much else about it because I read it ages ago but
we'll try and find out what it's called and we'll put it in the show notes if we can find it. Okay, I got two comics for Christmas that I like. One of them is the new Ms. Marvel, which is really, really good. It's like well worth a read. But like the one that I think might be of interest to those of us on the podcast, which I am really into, which like I read a little bit of it before, but I got like the first trade paperback of it, was a comic called Why the Last Man, which it's one that I think I've talked about it on the podcast a little bit briefly before, but it's basically it's set in a world where like there is a virus and like, all at one moment, everyone with a Y chromosome on the planet drops dead. And there is one person left with a Y chromosome, and it's their story. And it's sort of, it's this really interesting narrative. And, like, across this first paperback, like, there are some interesting, like, looks at sexuality and gender and how that comes across. It's some really interesting stuff with basically, like, the different factions that spread out in a world where like one gender essentially is wiped off the planet, or near enough wiped off the planet in one go. You get groups of women that like in some cases are like, okay, we've heard rumors of this one man being alive. He is the Messiah. He is the one that is saved, and we must praise him as a god. And then you've also got the people that are like, no, men were wiped off this planet for a reason. The Y chromosome is the devil's work, and we have to track this person down and kill him because he is the one person who survived the plague that was meant to rid us of the evil Y chromosome, so we must go and murder this person. And, like, it's a really well-written, interesting book that I want to finish it because, like, I got the first trade and I was like, oh, this is good. I need to finish it now.
So, this is the one that reminded me that you have mentioned on the podcast because it reminded me of Trisha Sullivan's Mole, which I still haven't loaned you because the book is sat like on a shelf in my parents' house there to be taken to Laura, but like lots of my stuff is elsewhere, but that one was sat out specifically.
That requires you to get from Sweden to England into your parents' house, get the book and get it to me.
We could just go to her parents' house.
Yeah, which I didn't manage to do.
I don't know where that is.
So there we go. I have to do the Grand Geek Night In book exchange.
That's fine. We'll try again at Nine Worlds this year. Oh, I like that plan. We should post books to each other, I think. This needs to be a thing.
And once you're done with Why the Last Man... Well, Laura, once you're done with Why the Last Man, Alex actually did an episode on it for Digital Gonzo.
Oh,
that's quite good. Dissect the book.
I'd heard that he'd done one. I was like, no, I'll leave it till I've like read through the whole thing because I really like the premise. And apparently it like gets a bit bad in the middle, like there's a few like volumes in the middle where nothing really happens for a while, but I'm still intrigued.
Oh yeah, it sounds amazing. I haven't read it myself, but I mean, hell, if we're going to be throwing around comic titles for people to look at, if they're just getting into comics, there's some older ones I could recommend that are really quite fantastic.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I don't know if anybody else has ever read Transmetropolitan.
I have.
It didn't work for me.
I'm a big fan.
Didn't go for it.
It's a very divisive book. People either love or hate it.
Yes, very much so, but I'm a big fan of it. But probably more contemporary, that you guys would probably be more interested in, is a comic series that's still going on called Lumberjanes, that actually, like, a friend of a friend is doing. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of... Have you seen Gravity Falls, that Disney show?
Yes, I'm a huge fan.
So, imagine Gravity Falls, but the characters are five females, and two of them are clearly a lesbian couple.
Okay, you've got me listening.
Okay. that's really all that... that's it. There's only 6 or 7 issues up to this point, I believe. But, it's called Lumberjanes, and it's apparently really good. I've only read the first 3 or 4, but I've heard that it gets even better further on. Kind of like how Gravity Falls kind of, like, comes back and pulls everything together near the end of, like, what they've done so far. It's, like, that same kind of thing where there's, like, a through line that really comes to the forefront of the story.
That is very interesting. Things that I've been watching recently that I think I need to re-recommend that, like, had little bits before. Bee and Puppy Cat. Like, I think I talked about this very early in the podcast when it had, like, a couple of very short pilot episodes, but they've started doing, like, a bit of a longer series now, and Bee and Puppy Cat is basically, like, my favorite thing. It is about this, like, sort of late teens, early 20s, kind of slightly crazy girl that has a dog/cat hybrid that is magical as her sidekick, and it has a bit of like a sort of magical girl anime vibe to it, like the sort of Sailor Moons and things like that. But it's all like, I'm trying to think of a good way to sell this show. Basically, Bee and her puppy cat will go on magical adventures in another dimension, usually for really mundane reasons. Things like, in one of the most recent episodes, it was they wanted to see the finale of a TV show they were watching, and they had to leave their flat because there was a plumbing issue. So, rather than thinking to tape the TV show or something, they're like, no, we'll just go to another dimension and try and watch TV over there, and...
Sorry to say we've actually lost you, Laura. You might want to repeat that sentence.
Yeah.
Assuming you can hear us.
Oh no. Maybe she's disappeared. Maybe she fell into another dimension with her magical puppy cat.
Sadly, this happens quite often.
Ah. So that's why she likes it. It's autobiographical.
Yes. Laura has strange superpowers. Our first episode ended up in about 3 different chunks because we discovered that as soon as Laura starts singing on the podcast, the connection drops out for everyone.
So her voice kills the internet?
Yes, basically. She wields that superpower. Wow. So,
that's a hell of a superpower.
Yeah, it's, you definitely don't want to cross her. She'll just knock out your connection entire.
Yeah, and that'll be it. And in this day and age, if you don't have the internet, you might as well not exist. My goodness. Well, it's probably for the best, because she mentioned Sailor Moon, and that's always... If somebody mentions Sailor Moon, the very next thing in my mind is, oh my god, have you watched Sailor Moon? Because I am a huge Sailor Moon fan, and get made fun of quite a bit for that.
I have never seen Sailor Moon. I have no idea what the hype's about.
Oh, man. It's not the greatest show. I will say that. But it was like, growing up, it was like Dragon Ball Z or Sailor Moon were the only animes that were readily available. And I was like, well, Dragon Ball Z is like large, muscly men grunting for several episodes, while Sailor Moon is legitimately awesome. And it's like, oh, well, I'm going to watch this one. recently, and of course, you know, the original Sailor Moon went for 5 seasons, I want to say. And in the end, it was like really bananas. But the new run of it, they like rebooted it as Sailor Moon Crystal, and they're staying much more focused on what the manga had, and it's brilliant. It is so good.
And we are hopefully getting Laura back. Hello.
Hooray. Hello.
Sorry.
It's cool. We ended up talking about Sailor Moon.
Oh, that's fine. Keep going about. Oh, did you mention Popeye the Sailor Moon?
I did not, actually.
What?
Oh, gosh.
It is my favorite image of today. Gemma has sent a picture of what appears to be someone in a Sailor Moon cosplay, but with the face of Popeye the Sailor Man.
It is horrifying.
Presumably, presumably the pun is Popeye the Sailor Moon, which I kind of love. I love pun-based cosplays.
Oh my god, that is both horrifying and amazing at the same time.
I know. How did you get to that, Gemma?
I forgot where I came across it, but yeah, I mean, to explain, I'll put it on the Tumblr and everything. But yeah, it's a cosplayer wearing a very nice Sailor Moon cosplay with like corset and a big bow and everything. But then what looks like plaster cast arms in like the big thick Popeye style with the anchor, but then like wearing a full-on rubber mask which looks like an actual old man with a pipe hanging out, and it is Popeye, but it's just like, what?
Like, that is my favorite thing. I love when like it's like, hey, rather than do this cosplay, I'm either gonna mash two things I love together or come up with a pun and do something based on that. Like, there is a fantastic cosplayer I took some photos of once, and like there's a few people who've done variants on this of Hello Kitty themed Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's the Darth Vader armor just in lots of pink and pale shades with Hello Kitty logos all over it. I'm just like, cosplays are weird.
So I have a great amusing anecdote about Hello Kitty and cosplaying.
I'm ready. Let's hear this.
Alright, so a friend of mine visited Japan long time ago. He's a big anime fan, like big otaku, the whole nine. And he goes to Japan, and he ends up wandering into what he didn't know at the time was actually kind of a brothel-ish thing.
Okay,
and he wandered into... I know, right? And he wandered into a room that was covered in pink with a woman in a latex Hello Kitty outfit.
Okay.
And he wouldn't talk more if he had stayed or if he ran away or why he didn't take pictures, but that was all he would tell me, and that amuses the hell out of me.
I have like one story of me cosplaying, which is the story of the longest day in a cosplay I ever had, which was I did a cosplay in London of Sasuke Uchiha from the Naruto series, and to make a long story short, I'd never had contacts before this, and I had some like coloured Sharingan fancy designed contact lenses, and the information I had given to me with those like cosmetic contact lenses didn't really explain that you shouldn't wear them for more than 8 hours in a day. I wore them for about 15 hours, and I tried to take them out, and they wouldn't come out. And that was a bit of a problem, because I was getting a bit worried about the fact I couldn't take them out, and I'd been able to take them out before. And I tried to have tea in cosplay, because I had no change of clothes with me in London. So I took a taxi to a hospital to try and get these taken out. Taxi driver ridiculously overcharged me, so I had no money left. Turns out this hospital couldn't help, so I had to go to a specialist eye hospital with no money. So I was given directions as the crow flies, and in full cosplay, I followed these directions walking across London and went through what turned out was a very, very, very scary part of London to go through in general, let alone if you're in cosplay. In particular, the one memory I have of going this road was a house I walked past where the windows of the living room were smashed in, and a man in his underwear on the sofa, just in the dark, staring at me as I walked. So I had to walk across London in cosplay through that kind of area at the hospital, and I had to sit around for several hours for them to take contact lenses out of my eye. So that's my cosplay story.
In the end, the removal of the contact, like, what, 2 seconds?
Yeah, it was basically they got like a pipette and they just sucked it off my eye. I was like, oh, thanks.
Anticlimactic,
but that was the longest day I've ever had in cosplay, because that's like the furthest I've had to go off the beaten track in a cosplay. That was fun.
That does feel like the London equivalent, like, to the guy sat on the veranda in the middle of the mist on the,
sat having a drink in his underwear with smashed in windows on his living room.
Like you.
That was Lee.
Oh,
that's amazing. I hate to keep throwing in stories of my own after everybody else's.
Don't apologize, go ahead.
So talking about cosplay, I don't do much cosplay. I mean, I had a pretty awesome Sailor Mars outfit at a party recently, but I might find a picture that I can send a link to you guys, because are you familiar with the video game Viva Pinata?
Yes.
So I made a pinata fursuit. Like, it's a full costume of a Pred's Tail, the pinata. I'm trying to find... See, I can send you a picture so you can see it. But it is made out of foam that is hot glued to fleece and khakis. And so you can... I sent you a link. That's me in the living room of my old apartment wearing it. It took about a month and a half to make... And it was, so they say that wearing a fursuit is like wearing a carpet. This was worse, because carpets at least breathe a little bit.
Oh my God.
I wore this at Otakon several years ago, which is in Baltimore, Maryland. And it was 110 degrees when I walked 3 blocks to the building, to the conference center, wearing this outfit. And I'm pretty surprised I didn't die of heat stroke.
I thought that's 43 degrees Celsius. That's nuts.
Yes, thank you. I should have converted it.
Sorry, that was how many Celsius?
43.
Whoa. Oh, wow.
So the best part about the suit, though, is I had the hands. They open, and I can store candy in them. So I can, like, launch candy. I've gone to a lot of smaller conventions where friends of mine will come up with, like, fake baseball bats, and they'll hit me, and the candy will go flying, and, everybody cheers.
Wow.
But this is funny. I go to a lot of, like, small... I used to go to a lot of small, like, fur cons, but Otakon's an anime convention, and it's, like, the biggest anime convention in the States. And so I go there wearing this outfit because, there was a Viva Pinata animated series, believe it or not, that was actually really surprisingly good, I thought. And I'm walking through the hallway, still wondering how I'm alive, because it was really bloody hot. And some tweaked out little 14-year-old comes, like, just body checks me into the wall. So I wear glasses, and I cannot wear glasses while wearing the suit, and I can't wear contacts. I can't put them on my eyes. So I have very minimal vision to begin with when some meth head anime fan just body checks me into a wall and starts pounding on me with his fists, okay? Just yelling, candy, 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 candy. I manage to push him away from me with my left arm and blast him in the face with a handful of Starburst, sweet tarts, which have jagged wrappers, okay? They're like jagged plastic paper wrappers. He takes a full handful of them to the face, hits the ground screaming, while all the other little anime kids descend on him like a pack of crows or something. And I just take the opportunity to just book. And the best part is because I was in a giant costume like this, everybody around was just like, that was amazing! They're like applauding while this person's on the floor probably bleeding and being just like pecked at by all of these kids trying to take the candy that I had thrown.
Your confectionery Batman.
Yes, exactly!
Instead of batarangs to the face, it's just Starburst. Oh gosh, that's amazing.
The only costume the one where I struggled to breathe was I did a Power Ranger cosplay that was the White Ranger from the original Mighty Morphin Power Ranger series. Most of the outfit was fine. It was all very sort of like lightweight fabric and like some like solid foam and stuff, but nothing that was like really heat wise was a problem. But the helmet was entirely enclosed, including under the chin, so there was no room to breathe in it. And that was fine. I was managing until I was outside, and at this particular convention, Just Dance had a big truck outside with an area for people to dance. And the original, like, the Japanese Super Sentai, which is, like, the precursor parody, a lot of the footage originally came, the theme tune to that was next up on this dancing truck. And some people had spotted me and dragged me up to dance. And
I didn't want to.
I did it. I danced. And for 3.5 minutes, I danced while unable to breathe in this helmet. And, like, there are videos. It looked really good. And then I came off, took the helmet off, and almost collapsed. And, like, just lay down and was like, I don't feel well. I don't feel very well. Like, I could imagine, like, while I was walking around, dance without breathing is difficult. That's fun.
Oh, man.
I'm actually kind of glad I don't cosplay now, given that it's just so lethal.
I've never I'm a cosplay light. That's my style.
The only other like dangerous or like awkward cosplay I did was one that was it originally belonged to a cosplayer called Tab Kimpton, who gave it to me for free. It was really nice of him. It's a Crystal Siegfried set of armor, which was from the Soul Calibur video game series. It is a huge, unwieldy, crystalline set of armor with huge bits coming off in all directions and so many parts to it. And it looked fantastic, but I couldn't sit down in it. I couldn't bend my arms more than like a fraction in it. I couldn't really bend my legs. And it just made movement and sitting down very awkward. And this particular convention was a smaller convention that had a lot of like a lot of panels. So I kept having to take aisle seats and like kind of perch myself on the edge of a seat with my legs out into like the alley, like the aisles, because I couldn't get my legs like behind the next chair because this huge suit of armor. So much problems I had with this. And then by the end of the night, I was getting quite drunk. And I snapped part of the armor because I was drunk and I was uncomfortable. And I'd been given this armor for free. Like, to the end of the night, like, you know what? I don't even care anymore. And I was like, I am invincible and drunk and wearing armor. Hurrah! Fun day. I went down a big slide in it and almost got stuck. This is it's a convention called Alcon, and it is particularly known for having like the largest, huge, like ridiculous. Takes like 6 ladders to get up to the top of its slide, and I almost got stuck halfway down in the suit of armor. It was a wonderful day.
That's amazing.
So, we got about 10 minutes left. Is there anything else anyone wants to bring up before we finish today?
I feel like it would be hard to top all that.
You've got some extra stuff you want to vent about, haven't you?
No, it doesn't really fit.
I was just going to say, like, does anyone have anything that they're going to do for New Year's resolutions? Like, anything that... anything geeky anyone wants to do New Year's-wise? Like, are you going to go to some more conventions? Are you going to play a different genre?
I think Lauren's got a good one involving Steam.
It's true. That's a good segue. So, I have a problem. Like, hello, I'm Lauren. I have a problem. I buy too many games on Steam and Humble Bundle. I cannot not purchase a Humble Bundle if I have the opportunity. So currently I am sitting at, let me look, 701 games on Steam. I have played maybe 30 or 40 of them. So my kind of New Year's resolution was to start up kind of a year of shame. Not a true year of shame, because there's no way I'm not buying games this year, but just to try to work through some of my backlog. And the way that I'm going to do this, originally I was going to keep like a written blog just to keep myself going, but a good friend of mine, Ian, he decided that he was going to do it too, because he's in a similar straits, and we're thinking we might actually make a podcast out of it, of just randomizing, maybe do it like twice a month. There's a website where you can randomly choose a Steam game from your profile, and we're going to do three of them, play them over the course of the fortnight, and then talk to each other about it, and just that way we'll keep each other accountable to actually work through our backlog. The three games I have currently, like, queued up are a game called Cloud Built that I literally know nothing about.
Can I just say, Cloud Built is, like, the greatest parkour game that's ever existed.
Oh my god, really?
It is like parkour with a jetpack.
Oh my god, so yeah. I'm, like, one of the few people that really, really, really loved Mirror's Edge.
Yes.
And I love that feeling of flow.
Yeah, basically, imagine if Mirror's Edge had a jetpack and, like, there were floating platforms for you to, like, you could go infinitely up in the air on these floating platforms. It's like...
oh my god, this sounds amazing.
It is so good. It is so good. Cloud Built is fantastic.
Oh, man. Okay, so I got a good one on my random Steam games.
Yeah.
The second one is called 1000 Amps that I was looking at to play today. It's apparently just an indie Metroidvania that I know literally nothing about, but we'll see how that goes. And then the last one for the first spread is How to Survive, which is a zombie survival game that I had a lot of press when it came out, and I'm sure a lot of people were familiar with it, but I have never played it, so what the heck.
Let me know about this as it keeps going, because I'm in a similar situation. Mine is less to do with Steam sales and Humble Bundles and more to do with the fact that because I do video game press stuff, like, for a living, I download every game I get sent, whether I get around to playing it or not, and I have somewhere in the region of, like, 1,200 games on my PC right now.
Oh, my
Very
goodness.
Very few of which I have touched. It's a slightly scary number. Like, I have so many games, it's quite daunting. I have, like, Itch.io has, like, a press account, so, like, about a third of the games on Itch.io I have access to, and I've never tried.
Like, oh, wow.
I have too many games, and I need to do a similar thing, because, like, it's like, oh, God, so many games I've never looked at.
Well, speaking of somebody who, it wasn't, like, a New Year's resolution for me, but last year, it feels weird saying last year now. I resolved not to buy any more games, apart from the fact I've got no money. It's also in a similar thing, like, I was buying the Humble Bundles and not playing them. Although I break that rule for Humble ebook bundles, because they're brilliant and they've really made me discover some wonderful series. However, this was all going well until Laura got me into Euro Truck Simulator 2. So,
oh no!
That broke it for me. So I ended up buying that, and I also bought Contrast for myself as a little present, because I found a demo of that on the PS4 I'm renting, and then it was like, oh, this is really good. But yeah, Euro Truck Sim 2 was the one that broke my streak.
I'm really sorry. As basically, like, Gemma is a huge, like, public transport nut and, like, loves transport networks and things, and I was like, hey, there's this game about, like, driving a truck, and it's a really easy way to, like, be doing something while you listen to podcasts, and that seemingly was, like, Gemma's thing.
So to rub it in, I end up listening to, like, the Podquisition, so I just get Laura in my head reminding me that she's the one that broke my Steam amnesty thing.
I'm so sorry. A, the fact that I made did you buy a game when you spent you buying games? And B, I'm so sorry for the podquisition. I'm so sorry. I feel the need to apologize for that show.
It's cool because they're going to be releasing a Scandinavia DLC soon, so I will soon be able to drive a truck from my home garage in Sheffield all the way to Stockholm. And I'm looking forward to that day.
I have far too many games to get through. Like, I need to have a similar idea of, like, something to make me actually play all these games I get sent. I'm like, I feel so bad that I never play people's games.
We could have room for a third person on the podcast if you wanted to do 8 podcasts a week. Well, no, it's every fortnight, so it'd be 8. It'd be 7.5.
I am happy to rather than a half of to my ridiculous because I need an excuse to play stuff. But
all right, I'll talk to Ian. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. To anyone listening who wonders how I do so many podcasts a week, it's stuff like this. I agree to everything. Cloud Built, you need to go play Cloud Built because if you like Mirror's Edge, like, this will be very much your thing. It is so good.
Awesome.
Cloud Built.
Definitely looking forward to that. Oh, but, okay, so, and again, somebody mentioned something, it makes me think of something that I want to talk about real quick. So you mentioned good games to play while listening to podcasts. Can I tell you the one I like to play while listening to podcasts?
Go ahead. I'm always after good games to play so I can actually catch up on my podcast listening duties.
Okay, it's called Viscera Cleanup Detail.
It's
so amazing. It's the reverse of a first-person shooter, as in you go in after a first-person shooter game has occurred and you clean up the blood and gore and alien body parts and everything else, and it's just this wonderfully zen experience of just walking through, putting a bucket down, using a mop on the alien guts on the floor, carrying it to the incinerator, and it's very repetitive, it's very mesmeric, and it's amazing, and it has multiplayer support, so you can do it with a bunch of other people. And it allows for some really hilarious moments because every item in it is an actual physics-enabled item. So you'll put, like, these giblets into a bucket, and you'll carry the bucket, but the bucket will bounce, and all the giblets will fly out, and then they'll splatter blood on the wall, and you'll be like, damn it, now I have to mop that too! Or you'll open a door, and someone from the previous, like, whatever was going on, has scrawled in their own blood, like, help us, they're murdering us, or whatever, and you just look at it and be like, ah, more work for me, and it's just this wonderful experience.
My love of that game is, like, it's the same reason that I love the opening levels of Pokemon Art Academy, and it's a very weird, like, comparison to make, but it's just sort of the wonderful, like, state of catharsis that someone can get into from just, like, focusing on one job and, like, slowly working through it and getting everything perfect, and it's just like, hey, I'm going to tidy this place up so much, I'm going to do it so well, I'm going to clean all that blood up.
Sometimes I play Tomodachi Life.
Yeah, Tilly plays video games. You play video games.
I play a video game.
You also play Age of Empires?
Not for ages, though.
You sometimes play Age of Empires. And you played, what was that weird game? The Grammy, something or other?
I can't remember.
You had on your laptop, actually.
You have to collect cats.
Yeah, you're a crazy cat. Maybe you have a cat.
Come to the vet? I did play Cupcake Mania.
How was Cupcake Mania? Tell us about Cupcake Mania.
It was alright. It was like the duel, but with cupcakes.
can we swap sort of like Laura and Tilly? Like, Tilly does Laura's game reviews for a bit.
Oh my god. I will genuinely give you my next video game to review, and we will, like, make that a feature. This is going to be the thing. Next time you have the podcast, Tilly's going to run a video game for me on the podcast.
Be prepared for the shittest review you've ever heard in your life.
It's going to be... Actually, videos that Tilly is excited about parts of, Broken Age Act 2.
I'll play it.
You liked Broken Age, though.
I liked watching you play
Broken Age. How you experienced Broken Age?
Yeah, I'm not very good at video games. I like watching people play them, but I don't like playing them myself.
I think we did just alone at a co-op game.
And you played it and I watched you play it.
Oh, no, you did the moving. I did, what was it? Split up the moving, the jumping and the switching. characters. And
you oh, yeah, it. I switched the characters and you did all the jam.
And then you played the... Actually, you played the...
Yeah. Oh, and then you played Gone Home, and I watched you play that. And you played,
The Stanley Parable.
Stanley, yeah. That one made me feel sick. I had to lie down and watch her for that one. the one about the girl with Asperger's.
To the moon.
She played, again, that one made me feel quite sick. So I had to lie down and watch her play that one.
We go through video games together. You don't always touch the controls, but we go through them.
Oh, I watched a bit of Mass Effect as well, like that.
Yeah.
I got quite into that.
You got quite into what, Jimmy Spam Romance or the Aliens?
Yeah, it was like, to the lesbian one!
Go for the lesbians! Space yeah. Lesbians.
But she didn't. Apparently she feels bad doing romances in video games, though.
I feel bad doing romances in video games when you're watching. I'm like, no, I can't romance a space alien when you're here.
Oh, goodness.
Anyway, with that, we're probably out time to... wrapping up. So it's been fantastic to have you with us this week, Lauren.
Come back soon.
Yeah, we need to have
yeah,
you back.
Yeah, glad to be here.
It's been really fun to have you. So self-promotion time. Where can we find you on the internet?
Well, my Twitter account is XAVIERFOXSHANDI, Xavier Fox Shandi. That's also my Steam and pretty much everything else. But usually I'm just trolling around on Twitter. And then if... coming soon, other than the Anthologam, there's actually the first game that I was contracted to work on is called Avarice Industries, and that should be coming out, another tabletop role-playing game. My co-author, Serafina, who is a very good friend of mine and who works for Turbine Interactive, she's been finishing up her side of things. She's writing the story. I did all the mechanics. And we finally are going to be releasing it in the next month or two. So, yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter. I'm sure I'll go crazy whenever that comes out. And it's a wonderful game, very satirical about the American corporate practice, very dark humor. It's excellent. So if that's your thing, hit me up on Twitter. And it's great.
Right.
And then check out for the Anthologam when that comes out, because that'll be awesome too.
And that works nicely, because that saves me having to plug Anthologam as well.
When it comes out, I'm sure.
Ah!
Yeah. Other than Anthologam, then, Gem, where can we find you?
You can find me just flinging stuff at Raygun Goth. However, lately there seems to be weird photos of strange things from fandom, including a picture of somebody in a Sonic suit just sat on the floor with a child outside an arcade. It's just odd. Yes.
Yeah. Tilly, where can we find you on the internet?
At Gathering Tilly on Twitter, and I've also started a blog, so now I can get you guys in the
self-promotion
things. I don't just have a Twitter. It's thelesskiller.wordpress.com, and it's very boring, but it makes me happy. So.
No, it's not boring, it's awesome. And you started a hashtag, which was
Cat Club, yeah.
I want to tag Early Morning Cat Club, which is where early in the morning you tweet pictures of your cat.
Only to other members of the club.
Yeah, what? Only to other members of the Early Morning Cat Club.
Oh, I'm so joining that, this. That, wait, that, it's a hashtag?
Yeah, hashtag Early Morning Cat Club. And it's our new thing. It's awesome. You can find me on Twitter at Laura K. Buzz. I do a load of podcasts, so you can find those by Googling or iTunesing them. I do. Let me get this list done. The Indie Haven podcast, The Geek Night In, Category Video Games, Oh No Video Games, The Podquisition, Laura's Gaming Butts, which is soon going to have a new home. Can't talk about that too much yet. You can rewrite video game news on Destructoid. You can read my indie stuff on indiehaven.com, and you can support me on Patreon at patreon.com/LauraKBuzz. There is my huge list of self-promotion. Hooray!
Gemma, I've just seen your photo.
She's looking at the picture of the child sat down with Sonic.
I don't understand.
That is going to be the episode art this week, I think. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, everyone. It's been lovely to have you all listening this week, and we'll talk to you all again next week. Bye!
Bye!
Bye!